Hello there, it's a special edition of the official EFL podcast as we look ahead to the Carabao Cup final this weekend, taking place between Chelsea and Liverpool at Wembley. We'll hear from both skippers ahead of the Sunday showpiece.
The whole surrounding of going to Wembley, playing against obviously a great team and hopefully getting some silverware is going to be a good experience for everyone.
I want to win that cup, I want to win it and I hope that we can take it back to Liverpool. It gives us an extra boost for the rest of the season.
We shall then dive deeply into the latest developments across all three divisions. Juliet Ferrington is back to help with the heavy lifting, and we'll also hear about the EFL's continued commitment to the entire LGBTQ plus community. If you're a fan of the pod, then please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so that you never ever miss an episode, or you can watch the show on YouTube every single week. That's the housekeeping done. It's the official EFL podcast. So, hello there, everybody. It's a hugely warm welcome to our Carabao Cup final special, and the perfect co-host for this one is Juliet Ferrington. Jules, how are you and how excited are you for Sunday?
I'm really excited, only because I actually think the Carabao Cup final is one of my favourite finals, just because it's for the fans and it's a packed out Wembley and it's always full of noise, which is what you want for the first showpiece event of the season.
Well, we're all getting extremely excited about it at EFL Towers. However, you've got contrasting approaches to this one. You've got Chelsea with the free week, Liverpool in action against Luton before Sunday, and lots and lots of injuries to contend with. Any idea where these two teams are at, Jules?
Well, I think with Chelsea, they've got a free week as well in the build-up to this, so that will suit them really well as they try and get some of these players back if they are going to be available to be part of that squad on Sunday. And they've come in off that massive result and performance against Manchester City in the Premier League. And so many questions have been asked of Chelsea this season. I know that, you know, it's been a transitional time for them, obviously, you know, over the years recently with the selling of the club, the new owner coming on board, and obviously Maurizio Pochettino came in last year as well, and he's trying to implement and put his ideas across. And without European competition for Chelsea this season, many thought they'd probably be doing better than what we are. But I just think that result at Manchester City and the performance, they put in such a shift. They defended brilliantly as well. And it just seems to be finally coming together for them. And you could suggest if this final was taking place last month or a few weeks ago, that maybe a different outcome would be favouring Liverpool. However, we've seen with Liverpool, again, only a couple of weeks ago, they had most of their squad available to them. And now it seems game by game, they've picked up injury after injury after injury. Not too sure who's available. They've obviously got that game against Luton in midweek. And it's a balancing act, isn't it, to try and get players ready for the final without risk of causing even more damage through injury to the squad that is going to be available to play. So with Liverpool, we don't know who's going to play. But what you do know with Liverpool is that whatever injuries that they do have, they always seem to come through and they always seem to get through them in the end.
Well, that's the most recent kind of form and where they find themselves. But there is historical context of these two teams meeting in cup finals. And if history tells us anything, should we get ready for penalties?
Penalty shootout to go all the way. And Kevin Kelleher scoring the winning penalty against Chelsea for Liverpool to win. Liverpool, I don't always think Liverpool play well at Wembley. Mm-hmm. And that recent performance in 2022 would suggest as well against Chelsea that it was goalless, and obviously the shootout as well. With Chelsea, you could suggest, do they have to win? Do they need to win a trophy? Yes, it's nice to win a trophy, but they're also trying to do other things as well and achieve other things. And the fact that they're only just hitting this run of form that they're in, I just don't know where it's going to go. I don't.
Fingers crossed, it's goal laden. I mean, it's something, as you quite right.
You want
say,
goals, don't you? You want
exactly.
You go to Wembley as a fan. You go to Wembley. You want to see goals. You want to see it done in normal time. And if it's an end to end game, and it's 3-3, and then came the penalty shootout.
That's
a good, that's a good final. But if it's nil-nil and you have to go through all that again, but that just goes to show, I guess, with penalties, it's the luck, isn't it? It is the luck of what happened.
And I suppose as well, given that particular history, and someone who knows all about that is Ben Chilwell, the skipper currently for Chelsea. I get the feeling, let's have a little listen to him, that he's out for revenge.
I've been to three cup finals at Wembley with Chelsea, two against Liverpool. Obviously, unfortunately, lost both of them on penalties. So, for sure, you know, I want to go there this time and win it. Hopefully, third time lucky against Liverpool at Wembley. So, you know, it's going to be a good day for the fans and for us as well. So, hopefully, we can go there and get the win and make it an even better day.
So Ben Chilwell there with an eye on getting Chelsea back into some form of silver. Well, let's talk about Ben himself. I mean, it's that weird perception one where as an ex-player, you look at him as still quite a young player. That's only because they all look so young and fresh-faced, which absolutely kills me. But his role's evolved, doesn't it? Did you see him as a Chelsea captain when he went there, Jules?
I didn't, but he was given the vice-captaincy, wasn't he, with Reece James given the captaincy when Maurizio Pochettino came in. Obviously, Reece James gets injured and he's been out for quite some time. So Ben Chilwell steps up. It's a very young squad. I mean, you talk about his age, but that Chelsea squad is very young. There's been a lot of players coming in, a lot of players going out. And I guess you grow into that role. You take responsibility and you are starting to see that now. I mean, there are so many positives Chelsea can take on recent form going into this final. And it just seems now to, and he would have a role to play in that, obviously, with the role that he has as captain. You just seem to feel that there's a spirit that's really developing in that team and he would be a part of that. And they seem to sort of want to fight for each other and want to be as one, whereas perhaps in Chelsea teams of the past, that hasn't been the case just because of the way that you know Chelsea have been in recent seasons with
different managers, different players, different style
and everything else. But I do think it's now starting to come together, which is why I think it will be a better final this time than it was in 2022 against Liverpool. And the fact that they haven't won anything, and you know, Ben talks about the fact that he wants to win a trophy. Three finals, he hasn't lifted a trophy. So that in itself, you say about maybe wanting to revenge is always one of those words, isn't it, that people say, but actually you just use that as a tool and as a motivation to try and achieve something. And I think it would be really special and really good for him sort of to get that feeling of lifting a trophy. And then with the final being at this stage of the season, I often look at it and I think, you know, for Liverpool as well, it's like that gives you a platform, doesn't it? It gives you that momentum. It gives you something else to go for the rest of the season. It kind of, it's a marker of what's to come.
I did think using the word revenge was a bit over the top, but hey, it's the official EFL podcast, Jules. I can say whatever I want. Speaking of captains, at the other end of the skipper spectrum, and I mean this with the greatest respect to both, is Virgil van Dijk. Talk about that collective, that togetherness that Liverpool do have. He's emblematic of that, as is the manager who we'll come on to in due course. But he understands that role of captain. Let's just have a quick listen, because it's about not just being on the pitch, it's the rounded responsibilities of the man with the armband.
On the pitch, obviously, I'm quite vocal. I'm always shouting and I'm never really quiet. If I'm quiet, then there's something up. Outside the pitch, I just want to be natural, you know. If I feel like someone needs help or someone is going through a difficult moment, or I feel like someone needs a kick on his backside, then I will be there. I will be there. And but like you said as well, it's not only me. You know, we have senior boys in the group that, you know, have to be there as well, and we are protecting the values and everything around for the group as well, in order to keep everyone in check. But to be fair, we have a very good team and everyone knows and respects the values of the club on and off the pitch, and that's the most important thing. And everyone knows when they join the club as well that is the case.
So then with Liverpool, there is that slight difference in the experience of the group, both on and off the pitch. He talks about kicking people at the backside and shouting when he's on the pitch. I've yet to see a quiet Virgil van Dijk. Is that someone that you've seen on a football pitch anytime recently?
When he says if he's quiet, then there's something to worry about and something going on. When I was talking to Trent Alexander-Arnold a few weeks ago, he was basically saying Virgil van Dijk runs that WhatsApp group. I mean, that leadership group.
Everything,
everything goes through him. But like, I know he obviously is the captain of Liverpool, and that's only happened this season because Jordan Henderson left. But he's always had that aura around him. He's always...
a real presence, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a real presence. And it's one of those where even you would think he was the captain if he wasn't the captain. But obviously... he is now wearing the captain's armband. But yeah, everything goes through Virgil. And you can see that on the pitch as well. Maybe not just in the WhatsApp group. So, and he's also one of those people that he just likes to help people. You know, he likes to take on, listen to, you know, if there are issues or problems within the squad or with players and in their lives or whatever it is. He always seems that type of person that wants to take that on board and take that away from that distraction away from you because he just seems to just have that presence around him and on the field you see exactly what he can do, what he's about, and he obviously is a winner as well, and he'll take that into the final on Sunday at Wembley.
Well, we're going to chat in just a second about his relationship with Jurgen Klopp as well. I mean, that's a huge narrative to this. The farewell tour begins, doesn't it? From a choke.
So many layers. There are so many layers.
So many laps to do as well. And we'll mention that in just a second. But back to Chelsea briefly. This could potentially be in a launch pad, a stepping stone. You've mentioned earlier on, Jules, about the change in ownership, the change in management, the revolving door sometimes of players, the money spent. And I think even the Chelsea captain himself, Ben Chilwell, knows that this could be the first step in the right direction for the new look Chelsea.
It will just give us such a boost and kind of unite the whole club back together. Like I said, it's been a few years since we won a trophy, so to kind of just have such a good day at Wembley and win it will kind of bring everyone together. And I think it would just be great for the changing room we have here because, like I said, it's such a young team. There's only three of us in the dressing room now that have won a trophy at Chelsea. So for us to be able to experience that as a squad and as the staff and the fans all together, if we can experience a Wembley day out and lift the trophy, it's going to be a great day for the club.
So then listening to Ben there, Jules, and given what you've said earlier on in the pod with regards to... transition, key word in football, isn't it? When football clubs don't win anything, they're in a transitional phase. Do they have to win something with the money that's been spent, with the outlay, with the investment in both people and the finances and the ownership change? Because in a different generation, this club was synonymous with hoovering up trophies and recent incarnation, not quite there.
As a football fan, no one has a divine right to win anything. You have to work at it. Mm-hmm. You have to want it. You have to be good at it. But also the fact that just getting to a final now is really, really hard. Yeah. And that is an achievement in itself, that if you're a team and you've got to a final, that in itself is a good thing. And I think it just all comes down to how it goes on the day. Do Chelsea have to win? I don't think they have to win. It would be nice if they could, but it would be nice because, as Ben Chilwell has said, he's been to three finals. He hasn't won. Talks about third time lucky. Two finals against Liverpool. They haven't beaten them. So all sort of the stories are there. And I like I said before, and I refer back to that performance against Manchester City, that had to be one of the best performances of the season from them. Yeah. And they just finally seem to be able to find that rhythm. And Maurizio Pochettino has been, you sense, under pressure to try and get immediate results and immediate performances. That takes time.
So Chelsea, potentially it's a beginning. For Liverpool, as I said, it's the long goodbye. It starts now with Jurgen Klopp. It could be a farewell that's filled with an abundance of silverware. Let's just flip back to Virgil, who absolutely knows what the script is and what potentially this could mean between now and the end of the season.
You know, he's been for me personally, you know, a big reason why I wanted to join the club as well, with the conversations I've had with him. And but for the club especially, you know, he's been here in the summer, I think 9 years, if I'm correct. He meant so much for so many people, you know, and that's the special thing about Liverpool, you know, it's not just, you know, I'm leading the game, it's much more than that, you know, it's being there for the city, for the fans, of course, but the success we had together, you know, he means so much for us. And when the time is there in the summer, hopefully with many silverware, then we can have a very emotional farewell, but we'll do it properly then.
So I tell you what, if you are a footballing romantic, you can't help but admire what Jurgen Klopp's done with the team that he's had. Virgil van Dijk, quite obviously a huge beneficiary of that. He even says, doesn't he, it's a huge part of why he became a Liverpool player. It's almost a decade in charge, which to me has seemingly absolutely flown by. A huge void that's going to be left by him moving on. He deserves, if anyone does deserve, to go away with a bag full of silverware off the top of what he's already won for Liverpool. You get the sense he's beloved, not just in that city, but by all the players, of course, as well. Just give us your take on your dealings with him, because he is a hugely charismatic man. He looks to be hugely frightening at the same time if you get on the wrong side of him. But in and around that tunnel area, doing your pre and post match chats with him, what is he like?
He's just normal. That's the only way I can describe it. I,
which is abnormal in football.
Yeah, because 10 years, when you say it's nearly been 10 years, yeah, 9 years, that it has absolutely flown by. Mm. And we've had a lot of laughs. Mm. I've asked some absolute whopper of some questions at times. I have been on the wrong side of him, but everything was all nice and it all got sorted and everything else. He doesn't suffer fools. Yes. But actually, I just think he just tells you how it is. He doesn't dress things up. He just simplifies things. And what it is with him, there are things he will say in interviews. There are things that he will say in press conferences. And there were things that will strike you.
Yeah.
It's really hard to explain, but things that he will say and things you listen, you think, yeah, that's right. But not football, just about life. Yeah. He's just a really. It sounds like he's just a nice. He's just a nice person.
Yeah. Well, it's a lovely take, and one that comes off the back of course, a lot of experience with dealing with not just Jurgen Klopp but managers at the very highest level, and the traits that you're talking about, I can absolutely see in different managers.
But he's also been, I think, because he's also been at Liverpool for such a long time, you can build that. That relationship.
It's rapport, isn't it, with people?
Yeah, it's a rapport.
On a weekly basis. So, right, speaking of that lovely tribute, who's going to win?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Because maybe it's that thing about what Jurgen Klopp said, you know, to get to a final is an achievement. Mm. To play in a showpiece event is an achievement. And then it's just how you play on the day. I would edge Liverpool depending on who is available for them. Mm-hmm. And a lot will depend on what happens against Luton in midweek. And with Chelsea, I think it'll be really close and I think it'll be really tight. And there's no reason why they can't beat Liverpool, having played the game that they did against Manchester City. And they've had that week to rest in between and work on things and tactics and all the other things that they do in training ahead of a final. I've never played in a final. I've never even gone close to a final. So I don't know what preparations are made, whether they keep it normal. But there'll be fire. There will be fire within themselves as well to want to lift something as a club, because they haven't won anything in such a long time.
Okie dokie. Right, you take Liverpool, I'll take Chelsea. Winner gets the other one a coffee, okay?
But I also like Maurizio Pochettino too.
Oh, come on, you like
him. Whenever I've spoken to him.
He is lovely.
He is lovely.
Yes, he is lovely. But he's not going anywhere. Well, at the moment. Time will tell, won't it, at Chelsea? Anyway, right. That's our first part of our Carabao Cup special done. Top stuff, Jules. You can go and put your feet up for a couple of minutes. Now, the eagle-eyed amongst you may have noticed the use of the Puma Orbiter ball across the EFL this past weekend. You can't miss it. It's rainbow-coloured, after all. There's a very serious message behind it, though, and here's why.
A I don't think they kind of realise just how impactful their words can be and what it can kind of do to a person.
Saddened, upset.
Uncomfortable.
Unwelcome.
It does wind me up.
Definitely feels like being bullied.
You just have to sit there and go, really?
It needs flagging up. It's not acceptable. It's not okay.
Gay, bi, trans, or whatever you identify as, we've all got the same blood when we're sat under a football stadium, under the lights on a Tuesday night.
There's no excuse for it.
Why does it matter who you are or how you live your life?
You just feel let down.
There's a lot of things I'd like to say to them.
Just think about the effect your words have and really, what are you gaining from saying something homophobic, something discriminatory?
People want to fit in, especially young people. And I think that's why making football for everyone is so important.
This ball stands for football for everyone, equality for everyone, and respect for everyone.
We are one union and we are one family.
This represents a sense of belonging, a sense that I'm welcome, a sense that I can be myself and enjoy football.
It's about representation for me.
Most importantly, it's hope.
I love football. When I see this kind of representation, I know I can be proud of my sport.
So, a wonderful initiative there from the EFL, which continues their cracking work across all three divisions. Speaking of all three divisions, let's get stuck into the Championship. Busy week and some cracking games coming up at the weekend. Last night, though, a standout result, Southampton 1, Hull City 2. And after a simply stellar first half from the Tigers, goals from Anas Sarori and Fabio Carvalho, of course, recent signings for the Tigers, Joe Rebo in the 88th minute for Southampton, it's a win that takes Hull into the top six and potentially one that was cheered all the way back up to West Yorkshire if you're a Leeds United fan, Jules.
Yeah, the M62 must have been absolutely bouncing after that. The Leeds United fans will be delighted, and they obviously play on Friday night, and we're looking to take momentum and edge even further. 8 wins from 8 so far for Leeds in 2024. But I really like what Liam Rossignol is doing at Hull. And to put them into that playoff picture as well now, it's kind of gone like a little bit under the radar of what he's achieving, what he's doing, how he's transforming that club as well. And remember, they too will have ambition and dream of getting back into the Premier League. But that was one result last night that really did stand out. And that Championship table and the top end and those playoff positions now, it's so tight, so tight. And they have West Brom, don't they, coming up next. So that's going to be one heck of a match and a matchup.
Cracking win for West Brom as well. As you say, Hull City take West Brom on Saturday lunchtime after that wonderful game on Friday night, Leeds against Leicester. Right, let's talk managers now. Been lots of chats about Sunderland, about the way that they've changed managers, about the direction that they talk about, where they want to go in. Michael Beale has come and gone, 12 games in charge. How do we sum up Beale's tenure with the Black Cats?
I look at this and I look back to when his appointment was announced and the reaction from the Sunderland fans at that, and I'm not sure they welcomed him with open arms.
Do we know why? I mean, is it because of the way that Tony got moved on?
I think there was huge disappointment that Tony Mowbray was moved on and departed and left. And obviously they can see the job that he's been doing at Birmingham, bringing that stability in. But also I think he was liked. He was liked, he was respected. With Michael Beale, he came in, you look at it, 12 games. Of those 12 games, 4 were wins. So is that really bad? Not necessarily so. Had he got enough time to work with the players? Not really, because you come in December. December's a busy month. January is busy as well.
Yeah.
And there's a transfer window, obviously. Was he disappointed he maybe didn't get the correct players that he wanted in? We don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, but I just think that it didn't seem to work. The fans didn't seem to connect with him. There seemed to be a lot of disharmony around the stadium. But also,
very
I think
comfortable, didn't it?
It didn't feel comfortable. No, and I also think that when you his last two games were defeat to Huddersfield against them, and then obviously Birmingham City, who was managed by your former manager, who had a lot of respect, and I say a lot of love, at Sunderland as well. And then the business with Trey Hume, when he was brought off and substituted, and that...
What do you make of that?
However you look at it, and obviously it went viral, socially, it doesn't look good. He apologised for it. We don't know whether he saw him offer his hand. We don't know. You can only take someone on what they say. He said that he didn't. But I think that just summed up the mood and the vibe around Sunderland. So it doesn't come as a surprise that they have released him of his duties. And now they are, it seems, going to take time and try and find the right fit. I don't know whether there is ever the perfect fit, but they're going to try and find the right fit, give themselves time and go again next season. Or, you never know, Mike Dodds might be able to achieve something from where Tony Mowbray left the position when he was released of his duties, because they were up there. Yeah,
doing well. And the job, of course, that Tony did last year. And of course, we send him our very, very best wishes with the news that he's stepping away for a few weeks to focus on his health, given how lovely Tony is. I mean, obviously, he's a man that we've seen a lot of in the very top tiers of English football. And to see him just take a little break, all of our thoughts are with him. And he did a wonderful job at Sunderland. It does now mean that Sunderland are now looking for their 9th permanent head coach since 2017. Simon Grayson, Chris Coleman, Jack Ross, Phil Parkinson, Lee Johnson, Alex Neil, of course, got them back up into the Championship. Tony Mowbray got them into the Championship playoffs. And now Michael Beale moves on after 12 games. Another club that has changed coaches and is looking for something between now and the end of the season are Huddersfield Town. Andre Brighton writer. There you go. I had a good look at it. I give it a go. My German isn't that good, but anyway, that's how I think it sounds. is looking to replicate the successes enjoyed in the dugouts in Germany and in Switzerland. I think he's just about official. Can he take up his post? Is he stamped and legal in this country now, Jules?
He's stamped and legal and ready to go with the visas and whatever visas you need now these days to obviously work in the UK. I was listening to an interview that he did with Huddersfield Town, which they released on their social channels. And it was interesting. He was saying a lot of German coaches now want to come and work in England. Mm-hmm. Whether Jurgen Klopp started that trend, I don't know. But obviously David Wagner is came along as well. And he was at Huddersfield, although he's with Norwich as well now. And
did a pretty decent job, didn't he, at Huddersfield, should we say?
He did. He got them promoted. He got them promoted into the Premier League. I think a lot of shout out to John Worthington, because during that short term that he was in temporary charge for, took charge of the team after Darren Moore left, who obviously has now got at Port Vale, picked up 6 points in those 4 games. So that gives them a good platform to work with. That he's lifted the mood around the place as well. The stage is set, but he's got a platform, hasn't he? We've got to see what he does, what his methods were, how he's going to develop this team. I think with Huddersfield, it just needs to be a little bit more calm, a little bit more composed. Mm-hmm. The players showed what they can do in that short time that John Worthington was in charge for, took charge of that team. And if he believes in them, which he truly did, that gives the players the belief and the confidence that they can get themselves out of this position that they find themselves in and climb a little bit further up the table. It's a good club, Huddersfield. It really is a good club. They've just got to find that right person, and hopefully this new guy will be that person and have that time, because they have gone through... I mean, you just listed the Sunderland managers who've been there. It has been a revolving door at the John Smith Stadium as well.
And particularly this season, hopefully for them, it's their time lucky with them being just a couple of points above the bottom three. Millwall underneath them, the relegation places, QPR, Sheffield Wednesday and Rotherham at the bottom. Right, into League One now. 6 former Premier League sides play each other on Saturday. Barnsley against Derby, Blackpool against Bolton, Charlton taking on Pompey. And it is very much the narrative of this particular division over the last, five, six, seven, 8 years of the size of these football clubs that are in the third tier of English football. A, it shows just how quickly things can change, but also it shows the size and the magnitude and the glorious nature of what the pyramid has to offer when you've got these big clubs duking it out to try and get themselves back into the promised land, of course, of the Premier League. Obviously, there's the Championship challenge in between that after getting out of League One. But there's some absolute humdingers on Saturday.
Top four. They're all in action, which is like crazy. And as you say, the history associated with those clubs and the fact that they were in the Premier League once upon a time ago, and they're all striving, as you say, to get back there, but they need to get back into the Championship to give themselves that opportunity just to try and make a real go of it. Bolton are the real sort of team that seems to be catching the eye, and Derby will be well aware of them, although Derby 5 unbeaten. Mm. What's interesting me about Derby is that they bought Dwight Gale in.
And the evergreen Dwight Gale.
The evergreen Dwight Gale. And that, I think that's a really, really canny move.
Yeah.
Yes, he's 34. Yes, he's probably not as quick as he used to be. But he has that experience. He scores goals. And that's what you need at this stage of the season if you're trying to get promoted out of League One into the Championship. And they realise how tight a battle it's going to be at the top of that table. Along with Portsmouth, who were there as well, who were trying to compete that too, and Bolton. And I just think Dwight Gale...
Backing
up the names. I just think Dwight Gale, he'll bring composure, he'll bring calmness, and he'll bring that experience, which is probably what Derby County need, bearing in mind the injuries that they've had in those positions this season. And when, you know, James Collins is missing now for the next, is it 8 weeks or something like that? That's 2 months. That's a massive chunk. So why not bring in Dwight Gale, who's available? It's gone through. And I just think that's a really, really shrewd signing.
Well, as you say, Derby second, Portsmouth leading the way. Derby second, 5 unbeaten. Bolton behind them, a game in hand, but on the same points.
Derby as well at Blackpool.
Lancashire Derby, Blackpool, yeah, who will look to put that disappointment from last night behind them from the EFL Trophy semi-final. They were beaten by Posh. Themselves having lost four on the spin leading up to that, but they've booked a place at Wembley. And as we've seen historically in seasons gone by, a win at Wembley in the EFL Trophy can catapult you through whether you get to the playoffs at the end of the season or go up automatically. So potentially for Posh, it's a good first experience of where they want to be come May, isn't it?
Maybe that's why the EFL planned all these trophies and finals and seasons at this time.
See, there is some planning behind
Maybe there is. Maybe there's a thought in this process that they kind of want to, you know, but it does. You win something and that feeling it gives you, you just want to take it on to the next game. I imagine that's what it gives. But Harrison Burrows, who scored a penalty, I think at Bloomfield Road, for Peterborough, he was in the crowd back in 2014, the last time they won this competition as a fan. So, you know, that would have been a really, really good feeling for him. The fact that he's now going back there as captain of Posh. Wow.
Full circle.
By all accounts, one of the performances of the season they delivered, having been on that run that they were on, that losing run, but comfortably, I think that's fair to say, comfortably swiped away Blackpool in the process of getting there at Bloomfield Road and to reach Wembley. And that will do. Again, we spoke about them a lot on the podcast and the energy and what that team brings to that League One. And you just feel that maybe this will be that turning point and they can kick on now and go to Wembley in some fine form, whoever they face.
Exactly, between Bradford or Wickham, that gets decided tonight as of recording. And Posh, in a knockout situation with the kind of firepower they've got, is quite...
You'd go.
It's definitely something that you'd be looking forward to watching. Yeah. Let's jump into League Two. Stockport, winless in three, 2 defeats and a draw. Key amongst those, potentially, let's turn it on to the team that really showed them how to do it. Tranmere Rovers, 4-0 against a team that's been absolutely superb for such a long part of this season. We've talked in the past about the Wrexham effect, all the attention on a team such as that. Stockport are no minnows, though, are they, in League Two? So it goes to show just how good the job Nigel Adkins has done. It was looking a little choppy at the start of the season. They're now 17 points clear of the relegation places. And I always say this with a hint of mischief, but nothing but love. But Captain Positive, he's steered the ship into very, very calm waters, hasn't he?
He has. And when you think about, like you say, when he took over and where Tranmere were, and the fact that he's done that with that group of players, and the fact that they didn't just beat Stockport, they absolutely hammered them. And
saved me such relish as well.
It is, but it's for someone like Nigel Adkins, who it's a big challenge. That was a big challenge taking on that role.
His links as well, given what it means to him,
given
and
what
the
it means
area
to him, and everything else. It's a big challenge, and the players have responded so much to what he's trying to do, and he's got so much energy. And that just comes across in the dugout, in the technical area, in his interviews he does pre-match. He's so positive, so enthusiastic. He has such a love for that club. And it was one of those on Saturday when you're out and about and it was like, blimmin' heck, Tranmere, have you seen that again? Have you seen that again? Stockport. And it just he just always seems to bring that positivity and ooze positivity around that club. And it has such a big following. It's such a big ground as well. When you go there, real old-fashioned place to go, and to produce a performance like that, definitely, definitely worth shouting out Nigel Adkins. And a really nice guy too. He's just another one.
And I think is what I've said about how far away they are from the relegation places. They're only 8 points off the playoffs.
Exactly.
Which is phenomenal. Speaking of Prenton Park as well, it was a place that I managed to have a little wonder about when I was playing a very long time ago, and it had a team bath, which is that's the look disgusting that is. So yeah, I mean, fingers crossed that that's not still there, because that's a relic of a bygone age that can well and truly stay in the past. It was always goalkeepers that spent the most time in there. Anyway, I'll move on, because that's
the thing I like. But the thing I like about Prenton Park, and I like a lot of these old grounds, and I know that clubs do move on and they do. You know, go to new stadiums because they have to for one reason or another. Or, you know, as we're seeing, I suppose, in the Premier League with Goodison Park, they're moving, but they've got an amazing stadium. Shrewsbury Town did it, leaving Gay Meadow. I loved Gay Meadow. And now they're out of town in a new stadium as well. I just like when it's at the end of a game, and if it's a midweek game and it's dark, it's just dark, and you just sit there on your own and you just take it all in. You can just feel what these stadiums are all about and what they've seen in years gone by.
The whole history, don't they?
The whole history is there. And you just imagine what it was like. But that's just
back in the day, that's a nice whimsical note, Jules. Let's just a quick clear up at the top at the moment. As I said, no wins in three for Stockport. Mansfield just 2 points behind them and a game in hand. Wrexham in third, a point behind Mansfield there on 59. Crew, MK Dons, Barrow, and a shout out to Harrogate Town. We had Simon Weaver on last week, bless him, after that mauling. He spoke very candidly. He spoke very well. He told us a funny story about the fact that obviously the owner of Harrogate is his dad. So it goes from getting a swift telling off after a result to him trying to get him to work his paddle tennis app so he can get on the local course to make sure that he doesn't miss his next game with all of his mates. So they got back to some form of consistency off the back of that, and well placed in those playoff places. Right, Jules, that has been wonderful. We've covered the Carabao Cup. You gave us a wonderfully moving tribute to Jurgen Klopp, and also you give us everything that we needed to know across the three divisions of the EFL. Have you got a busy weekend coming up?
I have got a busy weekend coming up. I'll be watching the final in some capacity. I don't know. I think I might be going horse riding in the morning. And Saturday, well, it's a free day Saturday. And a free day Saturday means I just don't like shopping. I just don't like it. I don't know what it means. I don't even know why I said that. I don't know what I'm doing on Saturday. Any ideas? Just WhatsApp.
Send them in. Yes. Shopping's rubbish. Football's great. And on that note, I shall bid you farewell.
It might involve a beer. Cheers.
Saturday afternoon with a pint and the football sounds ace, doesn't it? Right, that's our Carabao Cup special edition done. A huge thank you to Juliet Ferrington, expertly guiding us through all of the relevant points. Please do give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts, or watch it all with pictures and movement and stuff right here on YouTube. For our followers already, it's a huge thank you.
My name's David Prutton, and I'll see you same time next week for another wonderful episode of the official EFL podcast.